This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Afternoons on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Helen Farmer with you, and with an all-star cast. We were in conversation with Adam the OT, discussing how to be a playful parent, what happens in our kids' brains when we engage in imagine to play, and how to get over feeling a bit silly too. We were chasing the weather with UAE weatherman. Sajjad was on hand to talk about what's happening in our skies today, tomorrow, and through to the weekend as well. Laura Davies from House and House explained the concept of flipping and being a woman in that industry. Plus, it was Tenji Moyo in our legal clinic, employment law expert, discussing maternity rights, how to get what's owed to you, and of course, taking your questions on the text line. It's always a busy show when Adam the OT is in the studio. We're talking about how to be a playful parent. Adam is the head of occupational therapy at Kamali Clinic. He's a really vocal advocate for inclusion in the Middle East. He supports children, young adults with all sorts of different issues, and has a special clinical interest in DCD and autism, child and adolescent mental health, and is well worth a follow on social media. Some brilliant resources, free content for parents and also fellow therapists via his Adam the OT YouTube and Instagram channels. We're talking about the power of play today. How are you, sir?
I'm fantastically well. I'm always happy being back in the studio.
I'm glad to have you here. What's keeping you busy at Kamali?
Oh my goodness me, a little bit of everything, which is why I love being an OT so much, because you get parents coming in for the little babies who they're slightly concerned about but don't really know.
Baby babies.
We have early intervention, so I tend not to see so much of the toddlers anymore, but yeah, we get those as well. Oh. And these families, it's like they're beginning their journey on therapeutic input. Sometimes it's just a little kind of emotional handholding or guidance or reading material. Well, other times you have older kids, school age kids, anything that's holding this family and this child back and making their day more stressful, OT can help.
Now, you've got loads of tips and tricks and videos and, you know, even products that you like to incorporate into, well, family life for you as a dad, but also in clinic as well. Has anything that's caught your eye recently?
Oh, let me see. You know, it's integrating. It's always been something I would do. I've talked to you before about it, but integrating like the child's passions. And this is a changing landscape as well. So for the longest time, it was things like Minecraft. Then it was Fortnite. Then it's Roblox. And Roblox keeps changing every month. So I rely on the kids to tell me what's cool and hip. And I even sound like I'm an old man saying these words. But they keep me honest and legitimate. And then I can integrate their input into something like I do in the clinic.
Like what? So what's cool?
Well, it's all about Roblox at the minute. Mm-hmm. And then even Fortnite came back, but Fortnite has levels now. So if you're like bronze or silver or diamond or unreal or all of these things, another boy was telling me he wanted to be right. Well, no, he did not want to do writing practice, but he wanted to teach me how to riz people up, which is essentially chat up lines, to be honest.
Oh,
but he was writing out his top five, like, rizzing up lines that he does with his pals.
Teach me.
Bro, this is incredible. But I don't, some of it, I don't know how really friendly it is. But he was 13, so it was, oh.
That's so interesting, isn't it? Because actually, we're talking about play today. And to be talking about video games from the outset, I think it's really interesting, because I wanted to ask you about, does playing a video game with my kid count as playing with them?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, play isn't just one thing. So play is anything that is going to be engaging and developmentally rich. Is it enjoyable for the child, and is there learning potential embedded in it? And certainly there is a case, like, I would be a massive hypocrite to denigrate video games. I'm a big old nerdy gamer myself, and it's one of the main areas of passion and interest for a lot of the young people I work with. There are therapists who kind of throw their hands up in the air and say, oh, it rots your brain, and using the language that my mom would have used when I was a kid, sitting too close to the TV, my eyes are going to go square, all of these good ones. But there's an opportunity cost with too much. Like anything, I use the metaphor of nutrition a lot. So if you're eating too much of this thing, so a little treats once in a while, and there can be, for example, if your kid is drinking chocolate milk, it's got calcium, it's got protein, but if you're only having that as your only source of hydration, probably not fantastic. Mm-hmm. So there is good things that are in the video games, even things like Fortnite. There's visual perceptual skills and problem solving, not to mention the social connectedness that all their friends play it as well. So it's not to poo-poo it.
No.
And even if it wasn't anything about the skills involved, because the child loves it so much, I need to value it as well.
And that's exactly the mindset shift that I'm trying to have, because I see my kids, and you know, we generally have no tech in the week. They have their iPads at the weekend, and they can, you know, watch a bit of dreadful YouTube Kids. But they mostly want to be playing. They want to be playing Roblox, and they want to do something called like Tokomoko or something, where they like build worlds and things.
Sure. Okay, Boomer.
What I know, right? I know. But what I find really frustrating is my kids fight like cat and dog fairly frequently. But they will sit together on the sofa and they will help each other do this, meet there, you know, exchange this. It's really fascinating to see that their relationship is improved by technology.
Yeah. And sometimes as a parent, when you see your kids do that, it's like stumbling on wildlife. It's like, don't speak. Look, they're getting on well.
Look,
don't ruin it.
They're talking nicely. Yeah,
but they get along.
And then from a parenting point of view, you know, just last week, my younger one was like, oh, can I show you this? And actually, to see her confidence kind of boost by her being the one that's knowledgeable.
Yeah,
it doesn't happen very often when you're seven.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is true of anything. Anything where he can bring a little bit of mastery or she can bring a little bit of knowledge and teach me about it. And I'm going to, even if you don't care about the subject, care that they want to teach you about this thing. And some of my kids I see on the spectrum, they have rather niche interests sometimes. And the classic ones is about like trains and timetables and aircraft and different types of things, and it could be building PCs or anything, but my guy's going to love that more than almost anything, and if he does, then I'm going to love it too because he does.
Adam Otey is in the studio. We're talking about how to be a playful parent. Now, this obviously begins at a super, super early age, so we can talk toddlers, but we can also talk all the way through to teens, and I'm kind of curious next to talk about why. Why should we be playing with our kids? What are some of the benefits in really kind of facilitating meaningful play experiences? Delighted to be joined in studio by Adam the OT, the head of occupational therapy at Kamali Clinic. And if you're watching us on Facebook, you can see he's wearing a very on-brand sweatshirt that says
occupational therapist.
Maybe I should get a radio DJ jumper.
There you go. All the cool kids have got them.
There's a gap in the market, folks. We're talking about the power of play, and I wanted to ask really like nuts and bolts, what do we need to know? You know, how does play contribute to a child's development, Adam?
As a kind of child development specialist, as I suppose I am, it's hard to not sound sensational talking about this stuff, because for any stage of the developmental process, play is phenomenally important. I would say it's almost the most important. It's the meat and potatoes of child development. There's a great quote I always go back to by Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers. We love Fred Rogers. He said some very clever things, but he talked about this one, that play is often talked about as if it were a relief from serious learning. There's work time, learning, and now go play. Now you go play. Take a bit of trouble, go play, then come back to the work. Mm-hmm. No, for children, play is serious learning. Play is the work of childhood. Now this, if you want to summarize a lot of pediatric OT, that's the one. That's the mic drop moment.
Just gave
right
me
there.
Gave me goosebumps then, I guess. Because we kind of trivialize it quite a lot. But what can play teach us? And I would love to hear some examples maybe about how it can relate to, you know, grown-up stuff or hard work stuff or academic stuff, but also the social side as well.
Yeah, 100%. Let me call you back on one thing there. When we talk about we trivialize it, it's a natural intuitive response because we don't really play as adults. We like doing productive stuff. And kids, we think, okay, this is good for their development. This is good nutrition. This is the 5-a-day fruits and vegetables for their mind. But no pediatric OT worth their salt will ever trivialize play. So we have the inside scoop. We know how important it is. If you look at the things we would like be assessing for, like the nuts and bolts of child development, like motor skills, body awareness, social connectedness, play skills and friendship skills, visual perceptual skills, bilateral integration, dexterity, all of these things, play gets into every single one of them. Mm-hmm. There's great research. Some OTs like talking about this one, about if you're trying to learn a new skill and how many repetitions it takes if you're drilling it versus how many repetitions it takes if you just do it in a playful nature. I wish I had the reference to throw at you right now, but it's something
quicker.
It's something like, I think 20 reps if you're just trying to drill it. I want to learn this. But if you're doing it playfully, it's something like 6 repetitions. It's fun. And it gets almost integrated. The way I describe it when I'm doing workshops is, this is the way your brain wants to learn. Mm-hmm. Here we go. We are how many minutes in? Not very many. I'm about to say the words jiu-jitsu. There is something we say in jiu-jitsu when you're rolling, keep it playful. And you, it is such a better learning experience. You have guys that want to go ham and like, this is a fight. No, when I'm rolling, training with anyone, I do this little jiu-jitsu slap bump and I say, good training. Or we are jiu-jitsu players. I'm not a fighter. I'm a player, man. And so it's keep it playful. And then the learning experience is so much richer and it's just fun.
However.
Yes.
We are grown-ups who don't play very often and you can feel a little bit silly. I'm just saying, you, not you, most of us.
Can, this is true.
You know, this idea of, you know, imaginative play can feel a bit awkward for us because we get out of practice. And to be sitting on the floor and like, okay, all of your dollies are at nursery and, you know, all of that, I've found a bit tedious in the past. Mm-hmm. What I would say is now my kids are a little bit older. We're in a pretty sweet spot. We, you know, lots of like Lego and science stuff and art things, and I'm enjoying play. I don't think my husband's listening, but he does feel quite self-conscious, but silly.
Yeah.
How can we overcome that?
The first thing I'll say is, this is one of the tips I give parents, is be a good audience. So you know who the expert in play is? It ain't me. It's your kid. They're a natural black belt in play skills. So if you be a good audience, one of the best things you'll have as a therapist or a play therapist, or if you're a parent of kids, one of the most important skills, people think you have to be like this whiz-bang, really exciting, like kids TV presenter, like Magic Phil type guy. Mm-hmm. God bless you, Magic Phil. You're great at this. He's a like the nay plus ultra of that skill. Yes. Is that man. But that, and a parent might look at him and like a brunch or a birthday party and think, well, fair play to you. I could never do that. You don't have to. So that's a great skill set that man has. But what you can do is get down to your child's level and observe and reflect. The skill I was going to talk about that you need is you need to be a good at observing. You need to be a good listener. Mm-hmm. Even if it's a younger, non-communicating child, non-verbal child, they will tell you so much about what they're interested in.
If you're showing curiosity
about
it.
Yeah, man. So this is the kind of the bread and butter of like things like floor time and play therapy, is you start almost like a dialogue, like a conversation in play. Go to the child's level. What are you doing there? Oh, that's interesting. If it feels, one of the little tips I talk about for parents as well is it has to feel genuine, because you're child also has a pretty sharp old BS detector too. So they'll see, they're like, this is awkward. This is awkward for both of us. What are we doing here?
This.
Yeah. They're like, this is weird. What are you doing, Dad? So you'll find a way in. For some of my dads, for example, things like bedtime stories, role play where you're a character, you're doing a voice of the teddy bear, or you don't have to be you being silly. You'll find a way in. And your child, as soon as they see you make an effort to do that, they will invite you in wholeheartedly. And it's really fun. But you will find a way to do it that feels authentic and genuine, playful and fun for you as well as the child.
We've got Adam the OT here. We're going to go to the text line next. We've had a message asking about after-school clubs for a seven-year-old who will not sit still. We've also had a message about, my kids are 7 and 8. They do have toys, but they don't really play with them. Does it matter? Adam Griffin in the studio. He is the head of occupational therapy at Kamali Clinic. Huge advocate for inclusion and well worth a follow, by the way, on Adam the OT. We're talking about how to be a playful parent and taking your questions on this as well. So on the text line, Adam, a message here from Ida saying, my children are 7 and 8. They do have toys, but they don't really play with them. They sometimes play on their tablets, but when they're not, they play with things like boxes, blanket, a broom, just random house stuff. They ride on each other's backs. They don't seem to play with actual toys. Maybe 10, 20 minutes a few times a week, but that's it. Does it matter?
I hear this from parents all the time, and I get it myself. So my own kids do the exact same. It seems to be a natural part of the developmental process. Most of the big battery-powered, shiny, plastic, noisy toys get played with very impressive initially, but the longevity of them, especially compared to the price of some of them, mm-hmm. is not exactly fantastic. But I definitely wouldn't feel bad about if your kids are doing things like doing imaginative play, physicality, climbing each other's backs, playing with brooms and boxes and attending their knights or cowboys or anything else. That's all fantastic stuff. If they're playing on, even, again, it comes up all the time, but if they're playing on the iPad, if they're playing on the screens, that in and of itself is nothing. And it's good, but it wants to be compartmentalized, so contained and not too much. The challenge, if you have lots of toys and drawers and like could be treasure troves full of toys, but they have free access to the Switch, that's always going to seem like the more motivating alternative because it's engineered to be so. Very clever people have made it very hard to take these things away. So it's like if you have a house and your fridge is full of fruits and vegetables, but you live next door to McDonald's, that's always going to seem like a slightly more attractive answer.
I get it. I just want to give a shout out. Now, a few weeks ago, we met the founder of Birthday Bliss. I don't know if you've come across this organization here. And during the pandemic, they set up to offer birthday parties to families that were having a tough time financially. And since then, they've, I think about 5,000 parties have been put on here in Dubai, but internationally. So working with, you know, cake decorators and balloons. So if you are listening to this going, oh my goodness, we've got so many toys that my kids have just not touched or they've grown out of, or maybe it was a gift that hasn't really hit the mark. They're looking for toys as well. So I'm going to put a post up on Instagram, on my Instagram tonight, just explain a little bit more, but do give them a follow. I think it's Birthday Bliss UAE, but if you want to send me the word gift to 400 and I'll send you their actual link. So I think just a really wonderful way of making a kid's day a little bit more special, maybe looking to have a declutter. I would be very careful to say only good quality toys, no tat. Okay.
Yeah, and that's actually an interesting experience to do with your child too, because going through their old toys, they'll find things they forgot that they had and like, oh, and remember why they were excited to get it in the first place. So that's always quite a lovely thing in a few levels.
Birthday Bliss. But if you send me the word gift, I'll send you their Instagram, because they have put a link in the bio to tell you a little bit more. We have had a question from Alex here saying, any advice for after school clubs or activities for a 7-year-old boy who, this is in capitals, will not sit still? Even his favourite TV shows can't get him to stay on the couch for more than 10 minutes. School hasn't flagged anything. He can sit in classes and is completely engaged. But at home, no chance. Jumping around, pulling toys out, bouncing. It's exhausting, right? This made me smile because my 7-year-old does approximately 200 handstands and cartwheels per day. Does not stop. We were watching Gladiators last night, old school.
Excellent.
And she was getting up off the sofa to do handstands against the wall. And I was like, oh, just sit down. So I feel you. Now, this is something that comes up a lot with you guys, what you call your hard chargers.
Yes.
Tell us more about that phrase.
Press that you remember that one. Yes, my God bless them. I have such a special place in my heart for my hard chargers. So these are kids that have a high threshold, a high need, a high hunger for movement and activity and physicality in general. So if they're not otherwise engaged, and sometimes you might be confused and scratching your head, you think, this kid, as soon as he starts up Roblox, he's like a zen, absolute serene monk and totally focused on the activity in hand. But if he's not always engaged, he has what I call a large cup for sensory experience. So he wants to keep this cup filled up the whole time. His cup has holes in the bottom, so it's always draining down. He needs to keep this cup filled up. If he's not doing things like physical activities or jungle gyms or swimming or football or stuff like that, the cup's getting low. He needs to fill it back up again. So his natural tendency is towards movement and activity. That's not actually disabling in any way unless it's context inappropriate. So if he's doing this and can't sit still in school to the extent he can't listen to the teacher, then it becomes by definition disabling because it's stopping him doing the things he needs and wants to do. As much as it can be frustrating as a parent to have your child just cartwheeling and pinwheeling around the house and bouncing off the walls when you're trying to sit down, have a nice cup of tea and watch Gladiators, it's not in and of itself what I would call clinically significant information. It's more an aspect of their personality. I like this dichotomy. We have pathology, personality. Pathology, is it holding them back? Is it stopping what they need and want to do? Personality, okay, it's an aspect of their personality that you might find, oh my goodness me, can you just sit still and be the right way up for 5 minutes? Now, I'm going to give a little shout out to my own daughters, especially the lovely little Mia, because she's exact same.
Cartwheeling.
Exactly. She spends as much time upside down as she does the right way up. And she thinks it's hilarious the fact I can't do a cartwheel. In fact, second that she learned to do a cartwheel, she's like, oh, you can't do a cartwheel? No, Dada, come on, try.
It is the absolute joy of my children's life to watch, try to convince me to do a cartwheel. And she had a gymnastics birthday party yesterday, and one little girl got a little bit upset because she couldn't do a cartwheel. And okay. I was like, all right, I'll take one for the team.
Sure.
And did, I'd say, a 2 out of 10 cartwheel just for their own entertainment.
It.
And then they made my husband do a handstand as well. But again, this is the confidence thing. This is like, I can do something that you can't.
And the best one is if you ask my daughter, or I'm sure your daughter, can you teach me how to do a cartwheel? Sure, no problem, I'll teach you. Just stand there, now do a cartwheel.
Okay,
thanks very much there, doctor.
Solved it. So to come to Alex's question, after school clubs, activities,
yes.
Seven-year-old boy, what would you be recommending?
Alex, I do apologize. I do tend to go off on tangents,
no,
don't I? Anything that has, well, first and foremost, things that he might be curious and passionate about. Obviously, as boring as it is, and as obvious as it is, I'm going to say Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, because it is the best for child development and for fun and for physicality and everything. You get a little bit of absolutely everything. It's the perfect after-school activity. There, that's out of the way. But also trying things like that, like Jiu-Jitsu or martial arts or swimming or rugby or football or anything at all that has that level of just a chance to use the muscles, get that physical pushy-pully elements out, fill that sensory cup, but also in such a way that it doesn't feel like a hardship. It's fun. Some of my kids go to the things like CrossFit gyms, like Pinpoint's a great one. That's a lovely gym. My good man Samar does a great job of inclusion as well. It's very physical. So the kids have a heck of a workout.
Do you know what? I just said over the weekend, the boxing gym in Town Square, it's got a massive waiting list for the kids' classes. Spartans.
Great, great sign. Because the coaches do a great job, same as the guys in Gracie Baja, Silicon Oasis, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I have worked with these guys and they're naturally excellent at making the kids feel welcome, making the kids feel at ease and making the learning process, as we circle back like a master, playful.
There you go, Adam the OT with us. We're going to keep him for just a few more minutes. In conversation now with Adam Griffin, the head of occupational therapy at Kamali Clinic. Adam the OT is who you need to follow on Instagram and YouTube as well. We've just been singing the praises of jiu-jitsu. Message here saying, love jiu-jitsu at Royce Gracie. It's done great for my son's confidence. I wanted to ask you to open the door, lift the lid, demystify, if you will. What happens in your treatment? Would you call it a treatment room? Yes.
You can do a therapy room.
Therapy, that's better.
The thing about it is, to the layperson, to the uninitiate, to the untrained eye, if you will, if you look into a therapy session, brings it back to the topic we're talking about, it can look like, well, they're just playing. Yes, that is correct, except for the word just. Inappropriate use of the word just, because we are playing, but that is the work of childhood, as we discussed. So you may see the therapist using swings, using gross motor activities, exercise balls, climbing frames, slides, anything that challenges physicality and also is really fun for the child. I always try and manage a balance between things that are difficult and things that are really undeniably fun, because if I can make it fun enough, this child's going to give me their best effort no matter what the activity is.
I know it's very much going to depend on a child and their needs and their challenges, but have you got to a point with some, you know, some children said, you don't need me anymore?
Yeah, that's the ultimate goal. That's what every therapist wants. Any therapist worth their salt is going to be starting the therapy process with the idea of like, okay, how can they go on? How can they advance proudly kind of into the future that doesn't require long-term additional support? Now, that may be over a couple of years. They may have need long-term support, but you're always working towards a place where it's progress, where you're working towards independence and a happy life.
Adam, you are talking about play today, and you have just literally, I think, today posted on your Instagram a great resource for toddlers in particular. Why are you looking at that age group? Because I understand there's something on the horizon.
Yeah, so because this is the most kind of important critical time period. If you identify and learn how to be a playful parent, learn how to be playful with your toddler, it'll be a hugely fun experience. I guarantee you'll have endless, like, Kodak Instagrammable moments, because your kid's going to have a ball, but also it's the most developmentally rich thing you can do. It's the best start for their learning and development. On that note, we have this. The reason I posted on Instagram was I'm involved for the third year in a row with this toddler play conference that's happening in March. It has so many amazing speakers, great information that parents and therapists can use immediately and just take and apply to their own kids or their own kids they see in clinic or their own kids at home. And it's phenomenally useful.
And I think, honestly, we do need a bit of a guiding hand in this because, you know, we're probably decades away from when we played ourselves.
Yeah.
So to be equipped with some knowledge, some practical advice, Sounds really, really valuable. Now, that is up on your Instagram. But if you want to send me the word play, I will send you the link so you can find out more. Because, as you said, 20 speakers over 4 days and free, right?
Yeah, it's free. Almost all the information is free. There is a VIP ticket for therapists if you want CPD points. And there's little extras. Every presenter has a little VIP part you can add on. But the majority of the content is free. But there's the option of upgrading to VIP only if you want to.
There you go. Send me the word play if you want more information on the toddler conference. We've been talking about the power of play with Adam Griffin. The head of Kamali Clinic. It is adam.the.ot on Instagram if you fancy a nosy. Thank you so much.
And thank you so much. Can I just say as well, amazed that my website is just live today. Yay! Thanks to Ada and the guys at Epic Zone for putting up with me changing it 17,000 times.
Well,
but yeah, adamtheot.com is live as of today.
You superstar. Producer Chloe's in studio. We're also joined by an actual storm chaser. Sajjad is the man behind UAE Weatherman. His reels on Instagram have reached millions of views, and it's one of my favourite accounts. And when I heard that the weather might be getting a bit interesting this week, I was like, we need to hear from the man himself. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm very good.
Thank you for being here. We've already had questions for you, by the way. G-Sing, can you ask about the weather on Sunday? Lots of chefs are getting together to cook and meet in the desert. G, we'll find out about that in just a minute. But Sajjad, I want to know about you. What, if anyone that doesn't follow you,
okay,
what is your account all about and who is it for?
Yeah, actually, I moved from Kerala state in India. It was very monsoon season. The rain was like 2-3 days in my state, mm-hmm, continuous. And when I moved to Dubai on August 2015, that was peak summer. It was very extreme summer, and the temperature was like 47, 48 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
And I couldn't adjust the weather, I mean, transition from the rainy season to the summer. Really, I was very struggling during a weekend. Actually, I'm staying inside the room and actually watching some rain videos on YouTube.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so,
feeling homesick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm a rain lover, so I really started to miss rain. Then I started to research on weather in UAE, especially rain in UAE. And I got some information from Instagram handle, official UAE weather, that is National Center of Meteorology and Seismology. And through their website and their Instagram, I got some information. I came to know that there is rain happening in Emirates at least once in a week during summer.
Really?
Yeah.
Even in the summer?
In the summer, at least once in a week. Not in the city, but outskirts, especially in the mountains and in the desert. Wow.
Gosh, I hadn't realised that was, especially in the summer. I mean, I think of, you know, now you're February, March, you know, there's always the, I was going to say threat, but I think like the promise of rain.
Yeah.
And for, you know, for families that have grown up here, my kids, they get so excited if there's rain. What I would say, I mean, I've been to Kerala a number of times, and you know, the monsoon there is next level. Where I'm from, it's just grey and drizzly quite a lot. What about you, Chloe? What's the rain in Oz like?
It's like hit or miss, really. You can have like a really hot morning, and then there'll be a storm that'll cool it off in the afternoon. Those were like my favourite days, because beach in the morning and then the storm
and
hits.
Cozy afternoon.
I know.
But it's the driving. That's what I struggle with.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like all common sense just goes out of the window when it rains here, which is why I think it's really important to be able to prepare and plan your days and your journeys.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of what you do. It's some weather warnings as well. And this is for,
of course,
you know, people who might be wanting to go camping or hiking.
Especially for hikers, outdoor activities.
So tell us a little bit about why you started sharing the content on Instagram. So where did that idea come from?
I was coming to that. So really, I started to get all this information from Instagram, especially from National Center of Meteorology, their official handle. Then, then I started to go for a rain chase, okay, with their radar mentioned on the website and the application. But I reached the spot only after rain lashing.
Oh, you lost
okay,
it.
As per the radar. Radar update only after maybe 10 minutes rain lashing. I mean, radar capture. So, really, it's for me, I'm not able to catch the rain. Then I started learn weather forecasting as my own through YouTube and internet.
So you taught yourself how to forecast the weather?
Yeah, I forecast weather.
Wow.
But I learned the skill, because of this situation.
Wow.
So, what a hobby. We're talking to UA weatherman in the studio this afternoon. We are going to talk about, obviously, what's happening in the weather over the next couple of days and into the week as well. And I'm curious, out of the videos he has posted on Instagram, which ones have had the most views? Because some of them go into the millions. Can you get proper snow and hail in the UAE? And what is in store? Storm chaser Sajjad is in the studio. His reels on Instagram have reached millions of views. He's been chasing storms in the Emirates since 2015 and is known online as UAE Weatherman. Have you ever found yourself in any dangerous situations?
Yeah. On 2017 April, me and my wife went to Jebel Jais in Ras Al Khaimah Emirate to see the waterfall. Actually, during rain, okay, we could see a lot of waterfalls, and it would be giant waterfalls in Emirates because of the tallest mountains. So me and wife went to Jebel Jais, and we have seen a lot of waterfalls. And when we came out, when we reached the base, the military were closed the road, and we found that the road was damaged. And they told us you can't travel your car because the road is completely damaged and it will take at least 15 days to open the road. Then we were there in Jebel Jais base for at least 24 hours without food, without water, anything. Like us, around 600 cars.
Wow.
Okay, and a lot of families, 2,000 plus families.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, stranded.
I think we do take for granted that, you know, there are dangerous situations, especially when thinking about flash floods and wadis and, you know, really the lack of absorption of the land when there are these big dumps of rain, which leads me to ask you, Sajjad, what is going to be happening in our weather this week? Can we start with today, tonight and tomorrow? What do you know as a weather forecaster?
So currently rainy clouds are already reached to Emirates sky, but the clouds are weak, so we can expect kind of a drizzle to moderate rain in a couple of hours. And by midnight, the rain would be very heavy. Heavy means heavy to extreme level, and with a thunderstorm and hailstorm. Hailstorm would be, it would be dangerous, so you need to care of your cars. And
crazy damage in our lane a few weeks ago from hailstorm.
Yeah, yeah. So the rain will be continued till tomorrow evening, including all cities. Then second wave of this system, this low pressure system, and the second wave would be coming by Friday night, and the rain will start by Friday midnight, and the rain will continue till Sunday evening.
My cousin's arriving Thursday night. She is not going to be happy. She's a proper little sun worshiper. She's like, let's go to Wild Wadi this weekend. Let's go for a hike.
The Brits are bringing the rain with them.
she's Canadian, actually.
Oh, okay.
Actually, yeah, one of my followers, I know he's my follower since a week. Okay, he's a Switzerland citizen, and he's planning for Dubai first time, and he's keep on asking me any rain. So he doesn't want to see any rain. He's planning on 10th, so he's very unhappy.
Message going, can you message me a heads up about the Sunday weather, please? So she's saying loads of chefs are getting together to cook. Sunday, you think, is going to be a bit of a problem?
Yeah, it would be a very good chance of rain.
Oh, gosh. Now, I wanted to ask you lastly, UAE Weatherman on Instagram, some of your videos have hit, you know, 1.9 million views, absolutely huge. What do people love to see on your Instagram? What are the most popular videos, Sajjad?
Yeah, most of the restaurants, actually, they miss rain. They miss rain in a sense, most of the, expatriates, they miss the rain, and they feel about the nostalgia about the rain, especially the childhood memories and all. So when they came here on this tropical region, okay, they want to see something. So they always check my stories, okay, my content. So when they see some kind of rain videos, they are very happy. Even, I usually, during weekends, I usually go for a rain chase. So whenever I forecast rain in Emirates during weekends, so I post it on my story and people see it, and people who is interested for rain chase, they message me. Then I send live location. Then I drive to the spot where clouds will be forming, and I'll wait there. I mean, we will wait there. We will go as convoy, maybe like 40-45 vehicles, and we'll reach the spot, and we will wait for this cloud formation. Soon rain will form, and the cloud will form soon. Then cloud will make rainy clouds. Then soon rain will lash. Okay, then we enjoy, we get wet. Some people get wet. They don't take any videos, but some people they take videos and upload it on Instagram, spreading our groups.
Did you see the video last time it rained of a man, like he had like a wheelbarrow or like a trolley, and he was getting people across the street so they didn't get wet? I love seeing those videos.
But I guess a bit of a plea as well. If there is extreme weather, please, please, please drive safely. Think about delivery drivers in those circumstances.
One of the community guy, he was using his boat.
A bit of kayaking. On a rainy day.
Good business idea.
It is a good business idea. Sajid, thank you so much for coming in. Really appreciate it. If you want to send me a weather emoji or the word weather, I will send you his Instagram, but it's UAE Weatherman on Instagram. Where are you going to be heading to chase the rains today?
I'll wait at home to see the rain.
See the rain, cozied up at home. And yes, please be careful. As Sajid's saying, tonight going to be rain through to tomorrow as well, and then into the weekend. I need to talk to him off air. I've just booked a Dow trip for the weekend after and already paid a deposit, so let's hope it's going to be clearing up for the weekend after.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer on Dubai Eye 103.8
with House and House, 10 years of unlocking opportunities in Dubai real estate.
And we are talking property. Laura Davies is in the studio, seriously experienced consultant who works in Dubai Hills, and we're talking flipping, buying, renovating, selling. But ahead of International Women's Day, I'm glad you're in the studio as a woman in property. Tell us a little bit about what you love about your job, Laura. How did you get into it, and what are some of the best bits?
So I think the thing I love most about the job is obviously meeting the clients from all different walks of life and different parts of the world, and building a rapport with them that's not just, on the surface. You get to know a lot about these people, whether they're investors or families. And it's just the joy to like find the perfect property for them, get out and about on viewings, delve into the off plan and investment side of things. And ultimately, like going around these villas and seeing some of the spectacular homes that we see some of it is like selling sunset. So we get to see these like stunning villas with the fire pits, the swimming pools. And I'd be lying if I said that some of that is like my favourite part of the job, nosying around a house.
Totally. I used to work in property back in the UK. I did sales and marketing for an estate agent, and I loved it because we were working in Newcastle. So loads of footballers' homes. Oh, my days. Yeah. The decor choices were spectacular and spectacularly bad.
Yes,
in some ways.
Yes.
You appear to have a Moroccan themed snooker room. in the tune.
Literally, like, not sure that's a buyer requirement I've come across. Equal to that, like, I've come across some, I could write a book, like, some funny stories. Stories of a real estate consultant would be a good seller, I think. It'd be quite interesting. Not just like the side of like getting to know the clients, but also the job satisfaction is a huge one. The reviews you get, especially if people have invested and you've done a really good job and made them a life-changing amount of money. It's pretty important. And it's not as easy as just getting a lead and getting out there and finding the property. Sometimes we've got to do some extreme things as an agent, like, for example, queuing up at midnight at a property launch, which I'm speaking from personal experience. Mm-hmm. And the gratitude these people have for you. Obviously, they're spending a lot of money, but that without us doing these, you know, going the extra mile,
never would happen.
They ultimately wouldn't have the product that they've wanted. So,
and what's it like being a woman in the industry? How, and in terms of people you look up to, and I guess holding that door open to the next generation of young women in property?
For sure. I think, especially my journey at House & House, we're seeing a lot of females coming through the ranks. As a female now in real estate, I think we are on a level playing field. Naturally, or should, maybe naturally is not the word, but evidently, and people are probably not surprised, it is dominated by men with the figures and the market share, etc. But please do not let that put you off as a female, because like every scenario, every situation in life, it's not dependent on whether you're male or female. It's how you service that client at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And being a male has its advantages, and also does being a female, because that person at the end of the day will relate to you whether you're a man or a woman, as long as you are providing them with what they're expecting.
You know your stuff and going above and beyond. We are going to be talking about flipping. What is it? It's becoming more popular in Dubai and maybe even some of the best areas to flip.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer on Dubai Eye 103.8.
With House & House, 10 years of unlocking opportunities in Dubai real estate.
And from House & House, Laura Davies joining us now. You've had multiple clients that have, as the lingo goes, flipped, renovating, selling on the properties, especially in Dubai Hills, I understand. Can you explain the concept of flipping? How is it usually done in Dubai real estate?
So the main pathway, should I say, into flipping is obviously establishing your budget, and then it will come down to the location of the villa, how many bedrooms and the size, etc. And then from there, people will offer on the villa and obviously purchase it and go from there. And then we start going into in-depth of like the CAD drawings and applying for NOCs with the developers, dependent on the area. And that's when people will decide whether to project manage themselves, or they'll get a project manager to come in, usually linked to the person doing the renovation. Also, it'll depend on whether it's to live in, to put back on the market, to rent it out, or short-term let as a holiday home.
What are some of the guidelines, timelines around this? Because I've been in Dubai quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were the days where people will be queuing up overnight, you know, to buy those properties and going to the back of the queue and selling it on for, you know, a nice increase.
Yeah.
Is that still possible, or are there more kind of time frames in place, Laura?
Yeah, depending on your objective and what the development is. So there's two things you can touch on here. So if it's a ready-built villa and you have an objective with that villa, how long it will take will depend on how long the NOC application will take. So for those who don't know what it is, it's a no objection certificate, which you need. So it's basically your planning permission from the developer, and you will need that documentation when it comes to the resale of the house as part of the clause in the contract via the DLD. So that timeline can be anything between like getting the title deed, getting someone in, doing an 8-week renovation, or sometimes it can take 6 to 12 months, depending on the project. And then the other type of flipping is where we see off-plan resale. So the gems of like recent off-plan launches, for example, Palm Jebel Ali, District 1 with Nakheel, etc. You will see those appreciations a lot further down the line, as opposed to sticking them back on the market the day after they've bought them.
What about the standard of renovations here? Because, you know, it's like anything, you know, how long's a piece of string? You could be doing it on a budget, but I'm sure a lot of clients are really putting in the money, especially in the bigger properties
for
where there's a bigger gain to be had.
Yeah, for sure. So again, all down to what is your purpose. If it's an end user, so that's the family, the client, we say, who are going to move it in, then I think the budget is personal to them, because they're going to make it their dream home. If it's somebody who's just putting it back on the market for rent, so for example, myself, I'll be looking to purchase in Marina, looking at a 2-bed, then I will just do a simple renovation of the kitchen, flooring and bathrooms, and then that will increase the rental yield over time. Then you'll get the other developers who are like, they pride themselves in the standard they're doing. So they will pick up something in maybe Alvarado, Arabian Ranches, Sidra Dubai Hills, the Meadows. They're going to put 1.5 to 2 million, but you're going to look at 20 to 30% margins on these people. And they're like the show homes.
That's what I wanted to ask you in terms of where it's worth the spend. And as an investor, if you are looking to, you know, sell it on Rather Living and yourself, it must be really hard to separate heart and head and be like, oh, I love that flooring, but it's like, we're never going to live in it.
Yeah.
So where do you see the best value in terms of investment and renovations? Where are those big gains?
Yeah, I would definitely say easily a proven track record has been the EMAR communities, Dubai Hills, Arabian Ranches, Meadows. Especially ranches and meadows where they've become older properties. So those who are looking to buy them, you will get the clients moving to Dubai and be like, right, I want something new. So we will see those ones as a really good opportunity. Dubai Hills has obviously flown off the scale with its popularity. So that's always going to hold its value. And people still see, even though prices have increased dramatically over the last 24 months, they still seeing the potential of ripping out the EMAR kitchen and putting the flooring in, putting the swimming pool in and still renovating. Although it's worth to note now to the listeners and people out there, EMAR have got a little bit of a restriction now on the extensions, which I'm sure as everybody's heard it in the rumour mill. This won't be around for long and it will be corrected and we'll get back to these extensions that we're used to seeing, etc. But it is worth noting. So personally, I've been looking at areas like Damak Hills. So something there's you can get a 5-bed called a VD1 on a golf course. The price per square foot is a lot less than other areas like Dubai Hills. You're looking at around 1700 for something 5-bed at around 9 million. And we're seeing them transacting at around 14, 15 once they've gone through those upgrades.
Wow.
Similar to Jumeirah Golf Estates as well. You're looking at around maybe 12, 13 entry level, but their NOCs are much more relaxed than other developers. So you can really go to town on some of those properties.
And I bet people do.
Oh, you know, yeah. Oh. That's where the fun part begins when you see these, you know, newly renovated, like non-recognisable, nothing has been original, has been left apart from the shell and core.
And do you know what? That's why it makes good TV.
Yeah, literally.
I want to squeeze in one question we've had, and we do have Tenji Moyo coming in, lawyer extraordinaire, in just a few minutes, but it's about legalities around being evicted, which is something we've touched on the show before. Message from Jay saying, we've been given 9 months notice to evict. It was on WhatsApp, then we received a letter saying it's for renovation purposes, and then the official documentation from the court said personal use. They have about 5 villas and apparently have their own villas as well.
Yeah. So, sounds a little bit sceptical there. Yeah. I think Mr. Landlord's trying to pull the wool over their eyes. As per the RERA law, if you've got an ajari registered against that property, the 3 reasons you are told to leave the property is personal use, to sell, or renovations, but not because they want to make money. Renovations, maintenance, as in the building is structurally dangerous. And like any notice, it has to be 12 months from the day it lands, notarised from the courts and given to you at the property is when the 12 months
I would
begins.
Just like to say, on a personal note, my hairdresser is going through RERA right now. She says it's been a really positive experience. It's been much more straightforward and hassle-free
100%,
than she realised. So, the law is on your side here, so don't give up.
Yeah, always don't be afraid to push back and just reiterate the RERA law states this and that you're not being difficult. And, you know, there's laws to protect both seller, owners and the tenants. Mm-hmm. So just go through the reiterate saying, look, we're happy to leave in 12 months. However, we do understand that it's not going to be for personal use and therefore we can effectively take this further.
Go on, fight the good fight.
That's it.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me. Absolute pleasure.
With your permission, if someone wants to send me the word property, can I send them
Absolutely.
Your profile on the House and House website?
Yeah, and I'm on LinkedIn as well.
Amazing. Laura Davies speaking to us, consultant for Dubai Hills in particular, but as you've heard there, you know, really experienced when it comes to talking about all different areas of buying, investing, selling, renovating, and flipping in Dubai. Tenji Moyo is in the studio, partner, head of the employment practice at Gately LLP. She has been based in the UAE for over a decade, advising on employment issues. She's also a visiting lecturer, University of Middlesex here in Dubai, and an active volunteer lawyer. She's got various pro bono clinics and is generous enough to lend her time to us here at Dubai Eye to answer your questions this afternoon. Can we open this up and just say, what can we help with today?
Anything really, anything employment related. So questions around maternity, termination, end of service gratuity, family friendly benefits, remote working.
That's interesting.
So there's a lot going on at the moment.
We were talking on the show last week about the parent friendly label, which is an award accreditation for UAE companies. And it was actually super interesting to think about some of the policies that are in place. And the big takeaway was, just because the labour law says this doesn't mean you can't do better.
Absolutely, absolutely. And more companies are doing better. It's so nice to see that.
And not just out of the goodness of their hearts, in terms of attracting and retaining really good talent.
If you want to be competitive, then you need to be the organisation that has really good policies. And that's where people stay longer, and where people stay longer, the companies are more profitable. So it's a lovely circle.
Let's talk maternity leave.
Yeah.
Because I saw a post on Facebook earlier, and she's talking about how she'd lost her job when she was on maternity leave. And she was actually asking about visas, which was her point of the message. But I guess it really flags as losing your job on maternity leave. What do you need to know?
Well, you need to know that you shouldn't lose your job because you are pregnant or you've had a baby. So there are now clear laws around discrimination on the grounds of maternity or pregnancy. Unfortunately, we have come across those cases where someone has disclosed to an employer or a boss that they are pregnant and has lost their jobs. And in those cases, that is not a valid ground for termination.
I've had a number of messages on this. Message here saying, my sister is pregnant, expecting to be made redundant soon. She's wondering what her rights are regarding medical insurance. Are they obligated to keep her medical going?
Well, your medical insurance is tied to your employment. So the real point is you shouldn't be made redundant because you are pregnant. Well, that is not the ground.
It says the job description is changing, so her role will no longer exist. If she applies for it, she won't get it, meaning she'll have to take redundancy. The baby's due in June.
Mm, I think that's really unfortunate. And, you know, one of the questions we look at is whether it is a genuine redundancy or it is actually because she has said she's pregnant. Where we see an employee immediately being replaced or the role actually, you know, being filled by someone else conveniently, then we know that's potentially a claim for discrimination. Look, when it comes to the medical insurance, it should remain until the employment relationship has come to an end, but not only after that, until the grace period. So you find in some cases the grace period is actually between 60 days or 90 days. The insurance should last until the employee has a new sponsor.
If it is because she's pregnant, and I'm not saying this is the case in this particular message, but you know, if it's pretty obvious, and as you say, you later find out that you've been replaced by someone who is, I don't know, younger, cheaper, and not pregnant, what steps do you take?
Well, depending on the jurisdiction that you're in, so if you're in a free zone or onshore, then you can file a claim with the Ministry of Human Resources and Emiratization or the Free Zone Authority and file a complaint. Now, when you have sufficient evidence, obviously the courts will consider whether it's a genuine claim. We've seen some successful claims of up to 3 months, compensation and so forth. If you're in the DIFC, discrimination has even stronger remedies. So you're looking at compensation of up to 12 months. So very important that companies, if there is a genuine redundancy, they make sure that they can prove it.
Just got a follow up saying on this message about her sister, it is a genuine restructure.
Yeah.
So that medical insurance should go through until the end. I mean,
end of the grace period. So the termination date will fall and then the visa cancellation date will happen. It doesn't necessarily happen on the same day. After that, the visa cancellation letter will say how many days grace period you have. So in some cases, it's 30 days. In some cases, it's 60 days. So the insurance should last until the end of the grace period. And some companies do cancel it quite early.
Okay. It's time to crunch some numbers and look at the calendar. Yeah. Tenshin Woyo with us in the studio today. We are going to stay with the topic of maternity, pregnancy. I've got a message here saying, I'm starting work next month and didn't disclose my pregnancy as I was afraid to affect their decision. Trial period is 6 months. My due date is just after that. Was I legally obligated to tell them during the hiring process? And could this be grounds for getting fired? We'll find out next.
Dubai I 103.8 presents an array of independent expert opinions and does not advise one particular view. Always seek independent legal advice which considers your own personal circumstances.
Joining us live in the studio, we have got partner, head of the employment practice at Gately LLP, Tenshin Woyo, with us. Decades of experience, and we've stolen away from a very, very busy office environment and probably phone as well to answer my questions, but truthfully, answer yours. So please, please, please don't hesitate to get in touch if we can help you out in anything regarding knowing what your rights are, getting clarification on the law, or of course, anything that might be happening specific to your situation. Let's open it up. Cassia is saying, are there any differences between Dubai and Abu Dhabi employment law?
So in a nutshell, no, they're both covered by the UAE federal law. There is one zone in Abu Dhabi, which is the ADGM, which has its own employment law. So that's a free zone with a special law. But when you look at the general UAE employment law, it covers the whole UAE. Okay. So,
good question, though. No name on this one. And we've just been touching on maternity leave, maternity rights as well. Anonymous message, and that's absolutely fine. Don't need to put your name on, saying, I'm starting my new work next month and did not disclose my pregnancy as I was afraid it would affect their decision. The trial period is 6 months and my due date is just after that. Was I legally obligated to tell them during my hiring process? And could this be grounds for getting fired?
Well, there is no obligation to tell or disclose your pregnancy to your employer or your prospective employer. However, if you need to give notice for maternity leave, then absolutely. So at least 1 month before you want to go on maternity leave, you must give your employer the heads up. And of course, if it impacts your work in any way, you need to take sick days off and so forth, then the notification requirements should go ahead.
What about deciding when you're on maternity leave that you don't want to return to work? What do you need to know there in terms of notice periods? Is that added on to your maternity leave? You know, and basically how to do it properly.
Yeah, very important to look at your employment contract and see what your notice provisions are. So, for example, if you are on maternity leave and you have, for example, a 3 month notice period, then you're still under an obligation to give that 3 month notice period. And it will be dependent on you and your employer to decide whether you want to agree formally to reduce it, but you will be held to the contractual notice.
Okay. Hope that helps. Anonymous message here saying, hello, my wife and I are both teachers at different schools and currently, we both receive housing allowance. My wife's school has asked me to declare my current housing allowance and want this to go through HR so it's stamped. Are they allowed to do this?
This is an interesting one and a very common request here. Look, there's no obligation to disclose your benefits. However, I've come across many organizations where they have a local contract and an expat contract and, you know, they don't pay a housing allowance. Personally, I don't think that there's any obligation to do so, because when you look at the employment package for each employee, it's really up to, you know, your responsibilities and your duties. So each employee should negotiate their own terms and conditions of employment.
So presumably they're trying to find out what's your partner getting so we can go, oh, well, your husband's getting housing allowance. We're not going to give it to you.
Absolutely. The intention is not to give you housing allowance if your husband is getting it and so forth. And we see that with school fees allowance and so forth. But employees really need to negotiate their own terms and conditions, irrespective of what their spouse receives.
Tenshin Woyo with us. Really hope that helps. Message here saying, hi, guys. I'm on my husband's sponsorship. Started working with a company about 6 months ago. The company will not sponsor me, but they've said they will give me a labour card. In the meantime, can I get in trouble? I'm receiving my salary in my local account.
Okay, so you are allowed to work under your husband's sponsorship. You will be required to get an NOC, a no objection certificate. And with that, they'll be able to get a work permit, so a labour card. And with that, you will be absolutely fine. It's common practice in the UAE to do so.
So no need to panic.
No need to panic. Get the labour card, the work permit, and you're fine.
Whew. Now, I say this with absolutely no overestimate. We are talking about getting your gratuity back. Does the hospitality industry have different working hours? Someone's son works 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. 5 days a week. And the rights of single mothers here in the UAE. Do you still get your benefits? We'll be finding out.
Dubai Eye 103.8 presents an array of independent expert opinions and does not advise one particular view. Always seek independent legal advice which considers your own personal circumstances.
Tenji Moyo is a partner, head of the employment practice at Gately LLP, and we're helping out with employment law issues on the phone lines today. I really mean it. It probably is your last chance to get in touch. We've got an awful lot of messages to get through and indeed calls as well. It's 0487 15500 if you fancy a chat. We've got Alana on the line. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm really well. More to the point, how can we help? What's been going on?
So I've got quite a tricky situation. My business partner fled the country last year, and myself and my staff's visas were under his license. His business was then taken over by an investor, and all of myself and my staff have since left, and we are now working under a separate trade license. But my staff's visas weren't cancelled, and they're refusing to cancel them because they don't have the money to pay them the gratuity that they're owed. And it's been now 4 months since we've been separated from them. What can I do? How can I get my staff out of this situation?
Tenji, what comes to mind? And we're not on Facebook Live, but let me tell you, Tenji's face is a bit of a picture right now, Alana. That's absolutely horrendous. It's really, really messy. What would your next steps be?
It really is messy, and sorry to hear that. I would suggest that you go to court and actually make an application to get those visas cancelled. Even if you get the visa cancelled and sign the cancellation form that says, you know, I've received all my dues, you can still file a claim in the court. And once you have a court judgment against the company, then you can file that against the company. And at least in the meantime, you can continue with your life and with your new job whilst your matter continues in court. When visas are applied for, either the company puts down a bank guarantee, and in some cases there's an insurance. So hopefully there would be a little bit of money. It might not, depending on how long the employees have been working, it might not be a substantial amount, but at the very least there might be a little bit of money to cover flights home and a little bit towards the gratuity. So you really need to find out what's in the pot, and you can't do that without going through the whole process. I'm afraid there's no easy route.
How expensive is it to go down that route?
Well, they've made it a lot cheaper. So claims under 100,000 actually don't have a court fee. However, you would still need to go through the translation costs. Everything needs to be in Arabic, and look for a lawyer, local advocate, depending on, you know, the arrangements. I mean, I've come across some local advocates who will just get fees at the end. So it's important to see what options are available, but also you have the option to file it yourself. And it is getting easier with the translation process.
Alana, wishing you all the very best. And with your permission, Tenji, can I connect you guys separately?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, Alana, thank you so much for getting in touch. All the very best. Truly, truly mean that. Tenji Moyo with us today to help us out, answer your questions on 4001. We've got one here saying, does the hospitality industry have different working hours? My son works from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m. 5 days a week.
So he's working 12 hours a day?
No,
so
more
with a 14 break. Yeah. So look, when it comes to hospitality and any professions that work in shifts, there's actually an exemption to the maximum working hours. So the starting point is everyone asks what's the maximum working hours, and it, you know, by law it's 8 hours a day, so 40 hours a week, or 48 if you're working a six-day week. However, there are certain professions where there is a special cabinet resolution which allows the working hours to increase. What is actually important is that an employee is getting sufficient breaks. So after every 5 hours, you must have a break for prayer and eating. And it's also important to make sure that the working hours are not in breach of health and safety provisions. So really important to make sure that there's enough breaks for food and so forth. But yes, the answer is where someone is working shifts, there is an exemption when it comes to the maximum working hours.
Okay, really hope that helps. We were just talking earlier about pregnancy and maternity, and we've got a number of messages that we're going to come to again on that, Tenji, because I think it's a really, really important one for women and families to know their rights. Message here saying, after years of civil marriage, a friend of mine got pregnant, partner refused to be part of it. Will she be legally able to get all of the benefits, insurance, maternity leave from her work as a single mother? She's based in Dubai, salaries above 25,000 and working for an international company.
So where you have the correct sponsorship and your contractual documents do allow you to sponsor your child, then you should be able to have all your contractual benefits. However, saying that, I have come across some employees that have had difficulties because perhaps the paperwork is not clear or the sponsorship arrangement is not clear. But if it's a UAE sponsor and you're sponsoring your child, you should be able to make use of all the benefits that you get at work.
All the best to your friend. And message here saying, I was forced to resign after my maternity leave and annual leave, so summer in education field, saying the position is no longer available because of budget, which for a company like the one I'm employed at isn't really the case. They then offered another position that wasn't suitable for me, and when I refused, they asked my resignation letter. It's been almost 8 months without salary because of this situation. Where does this listener stand?
Well, it sounds like a potential claim for a discrimination on the grounds of pregnancy. Look, an employer is able to terminate for economic reasons now under the new UAE labour law. So as long as it's genuine, a genuine redundancy situation, then you'll find claims for unfair or arbitrary dismissal might fail. So it would need to be assessed on a case-by-case basis. If it definitely is because of pregnancy, then absolutely they should consider filing.
I just want to come back to one of the messages we had earlier, which was about getting your gratuity. And then I know that the caller's situation was a bit more extreme and you know, obviously working on behalf of people that were working for her. But Jay says, it's been 8 months since I left my job and still no gratuity. I was there 5 years, just keep pushing the date by a few weeks, but all empty promises. I actually really like my ex-boss and feel for him. He's chasing unpaid bills to cover the gratuity and other debts, but I'm owed a significant amount that I really need. Any advice?
Well, don't wait too long because the limitation period expires after 12 months, which effectively means that you will no longer be able to claim it. So make sure you put in a claim, irrespective of the relationship that you have with your, you know, your employer. Put a claim in. You're entitled to end of service gratuity. Actually, under the new law, it says you must be paid within 14 days of the termination date. So there's very clear guidelines as to how long you should pay. And the UAE labour law says any companies that breach any aspect of the law might be exposed to penalties of up to 1 million dirhams. So now there is a clear warning from the authorities that gratuity should be paid. And if there are difficulties, I would suggest some sort of installment payment plan, a settlement agreement is put in so that there are some sort of payments coming in place. And then you can enforce that breach of the settlement agreement.
Tenji Moya with us in the studio. No name on this one. You can always reach out completely anonymously. That is not a problem at all. Saying, teacher here for a major corporation. My husband is my dependent and joined in January of last year, 2023. We only found out he was uninsured when he had an emergency surgery in November. My school claimed it was our responsibility to get him insurance, but mentioned nothing about it on the onboarding process. Who is at fault?
Oh, absolutely. The employer will always be at fault. So your employer must make sure that you have the your medical insurance. The difference is sometimes you find employers are sponsored by their spouse and then the obligation passes on. But very important to make sure that you have that medical insurance. And there are fines. It's a requirement under the Dubai Health Insurance Law.
Tanji, we had a message earlier asking, are you legally obliged to disclose your pregnancy? pregnancy. A message here saying, can you be sacked for not disclosing medical conditions? My wife recently had a diagnosis of epilepsy and is worried about telling her work. Will that fall under discrimination?
Well, look, I think you need to make a call. Does your medical condition mean that it will impact your day-to-day role? If it does, then, you know, we would always recommend that there's some sort of open dialogue about how it will impact your role. There are many conditions that an employee is able to work with that, you know, will not impact the day-to-day role. But hopefully there should be a free policy where there's a speak-up culture. And in some cases, minor adjustments from the employer will ensure, you know, good work relations.
Hope that helps, and all the very best to you and your wife. Quick question before we get to the traffic. Does Tenji know how gratuity is calculated if your salary has gone up and down over the years of employment? I presumed it's worked out as a portion of the salary you receive each month, not an average over the year or of the last wage you were paid. And this is an interesting question because we saw during the pandemic, you know, people taking a salary cut. So how is that gratuity calculated in a kind of, I guess, the most typical way?
Yeah, so it's still on the last drawn wage, which for some people is quite disappointing, especially if they go down and they've been paid, you know, higher wages before. And we saw that during the pandemic. The only place where we tend to see any kind of fluctuation is in the DIFC. So in the DIFC, it's paid on a monthly basis and it's paid according to what the employee is receiving at the time. And it goes into a third-party fund, so it's completely different aspect. But it is when we're talking about mainland and in the free zones, it's on the last drawn wage.
Hope that helps. Tenji Moyo with us. We're going to be coming back for probably one or two quick-fire questions.
Dubai I 103.8 presents an array of independent expert opinions and does not advise one particular view. Always seek independent legal advice which considers your own personal circumstances.
Tenji Moyo has been with us, partner, head of employment at Gately. And let's go to this message. No name on this one, saying we sometimes get labourers who get diagnosed with an infectious disease that requires them to stay in hospital, sometimes for a prolonged period. I have noticed that some don't get paid their salary for this duration. Is there a law that protects them against losing their salary?
Yeah, so there is. If the employee has a medical note and has been signed off, so if they've been admitted to hospital, that would mean they're signed off, they're entitled to be paid. So 15 days full pay, 30 days half pay, and that's 45 days, and then the following 45 days unpaid. So in total, 90 days sick pay before they can be terminated.
Tenji, it's been an absolute whirlwind of messages this afternoon. Will you come back to answer them as we
course.
Didn't get to?
Of course. I love it here. Thank you for having me.
In the meantime, where can people find you in real life and online?
Yeah, you can send me an email. That's tmoyo@gatelyae.com or on LinkedIn, Tenji Moyo. Happy to help.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Really, really appreciate your time as ever.
Dubai I 103.8 presents an array of independent expert opinions and does not advise one particular view. Always seek independent legal advice which considers your own personal circumstances.
And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai I 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5pm.
You've been listening to a Dubai I 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai I in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaii1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.